Hey, listeners, before we get to our regular show, I have an exciting announcement about our next live show, Together for the Rant, The Last Laugh. Now, this doesn't mean it's our last live show ever. It means that it is connected to the last Together for the Gospel conference ever. Thus, The Last Laugh. It will be Monday, April 18th at 7 p.m. at Sojourn New Albany, Sojourn Church, New Albany, Indiana. Now, you might be thinking, T4G is in Louisville. Indiana's a different state. Those don't sound very close together. In reality, New Albany is about a 10-minute drive from where T4G takes place, just across the river there, so very close by. Again, Monday, April 18th, 7 p.m., we will have two different ticket options. We have a standard $20 ticket option. That just means you get to attend and enjoy two live recordings and a Q&A and hanging out with us. Or we have a $45 premium ticket option, which there's a limited quantity of these, up to 50. That will include an exclusive Last Laugh t-shirt and some other goodies designed by our good friend Josh Byers, who does all of our swag and all of our merch for us. So again, $20 or $45, including a t-shirt, some stickers, other goodies. You can find all of this at thehappyrant.com. It's at thehappyrant.com. Look for the live show link. You can buy your tickets there. You can select premium or standard. We would love to see you Monday, April 18th, 7 p.m. for Together for the Rant, The Last Laugh. Now, enjoy the podcast.
Happy Rant. Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friend, my partner in radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, Ronnie is out doing what humble small-town pastors do, which is getting on airplanes and flying all over the country writing books.
Staying in tiny houses in middle America.
Yeah, I mean, when I was growing up in Hartford City, you know, this little blue-collar town in Indiana, you know, our pastors often were not there because they were just jet-setting across the country, so... you know, that's,
I mean, my understanding is he went St. Louis and Kansas City. So, no offense to those residents, but I'm not jealous of him.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. He better him than us, but, yeah. So Ronnie, not here again. But Piper, we are here again and we are going to talk some travel stuff and some travel preferences, I guess in quote unquote honor of our third host. We're going to talk about some
honor. Yeah. Honor and, you know, mockery and judgment from a distance, et cetera.
Honor question mark. We will get into that, Pipe, but we have kind of a historic moment, on the program in that we have some big changes coming up that we've kind of teased to people. We'll be ready to roll that out, for real in a couple of weeks, but, this is going to be our last kind of traditional ad read with Dwell Bible. That doesn't mean we're breaking up with Dwell Bible. It just means our relationship is going to change a little bit. And this may be the last Barnabas Piper Dwell Bible ad read. So this will go down in the annals of radio history as a big moment.
I'm a little verklempt. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't prepared for the kind of emotional gravity of this moment.
I know it, dude. Yeah, this is kind of like a little bit of a farewell tour of sorts. But, you know, not to put added pressure on you to really nail this read, but... you know, it's kind of a big one. Not a dry eye in the house, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it feels a little bit, you know, like when, like the summer after high school, when, you know, some people are staying home and then one friend is like heading off for the West Coast, which for those of us who grew up in middle America, the West Coast may as well be like heading off to Australia or Vietnam or something. So this is the farewell to Dwell. And it's, you know, it's kind of heartrending, but also exciting because big things are afoot.
Yeah.
And maybe we're the ones going to the West Coast because we're the ones making the change. But again, it's sort of a, like with some trepidation and some sorrow, but also this is a really good thing for us kind of situation.
Yeah. Like Dwell is standing on the train platform in the 1950s movie. And we are like Cary Grant, like leaning out the window, waving back fondly at Dwell.
The train just goes slowly around the bend and out of sight.
Exactly.
They go sadly home to their bleak middle American existence. And we set off for a grand new horizons.
Yeah. Like think of us as like photographing our shoes in the airport waiting room and Dwell sort of reading the tweet later. You know, yeah. That's kind of the dynamic.
It's sadly accurate.
I want to do a couple minutes on that. But Piper, do tell them about Dwell Bible. Then we'll get back into photographing one's shoes in the airport and why that's.
Yes. Let's get our priorities in order here. So listeners, Dwell Bible is an audio Bible app who we love dearly. In all seriousness, we really love the product. It is, I think it's the best Bible listening experience I'm aware of because of all of the different ways that you can go about it. It's not just a straight read unless you want that. There's multiple narrators, multiple musical backgrounds, which is great, especially if you're running or doing chores or whatever, to kind of have that melodic background is nice. They have plans where you can listen through the Bible in a period of time, whether that's a year, 2 years, whatever, or they have playlists where if you're just, you know, you're feeling particularly discouraged, they have promises of God or encouragements or prayers or different things like that. So just a whole variety of ways to engage scripture in all of those times of life when reading is kind of off the table. You know, you can't do it while you're driving. You can't do it while you're working out. You can't do it while you're mowing the lawn, but you can listen. So if you go to dwellapp.io/happyrant, you can see the discounts they have for our listeners. Those will continue until they decide to shut them down. So take advantage of those. You can also buy this as a gift for someone else. You can buy Dwell and give away the access to somebody who you know will appreciate it. I use it as I'm getting ready to teach or preach. I often use it when it's just, you know, kind of a particularly weary stretch of life and reading feels cumbersome, but I know that God's word's, you know, particularly important in those times. So, we encourage you to check it out. Go to dwellapp.io/happyrant. You'll see a 30% discount on their lifetime subscription and a 10% discount on their annual subscription. The money is completely worth it. It will, I don't know if revolutionize is the right word, but it will certainly expand the way that you can interact with, engage, and absorb God's word.
Love it, man. Yeah, it's a really good product that, like, we all love using, you know, which I think is rare in this business, especially as the show grows and we take on different ads. Like, this is one that I know we all use it, we all enjoy it, we all really think a lot of it, and great way to get some Bible into your life. So, speaking of getting things into your life electronically, I have probably three friends on a rotation that just kind of their own volition will screenshot me Ronnie's tweets and just send them my way. So in a sense, I feel like I subscribe to Ronnie's Twitter feed despite not subscribing to it. And one of the recent ones was like him photographing a picture of his Chuck Taylors on like an airplane or in an airport lounge with the kind of like requisite sort of faux humble caption. My question to you is this a thing that lots of people are doing, or a lot of people doing like the shoes in the airport photo as a way of saying, hey, I'm traveling, look at me?
I don't know that. I think it used to be more of a thing, kind of like, you know, there was a time when everybody posted pictures of their latte art or lunch.
Yeah, true.
Or, you know, whatever. Yeah. And I'd say that's still out there, but it's not the norm.
Yeah.
The only people I know of who do this with consistency are people in ministry. So, and they do it, some of them do it sort of tongue in cheek. Some of them do it like it's their shtick. So best friend Jared C. Wilson does this when he travels, and it's always shoes and his brown leather backpack. Like,
yeah.
And so I kind of wonder if Ronnie is sort of doing this in, you know, in honor
as an
of,
homage, as it were. Kind of
that sort of thing, or possibly in mockery of. I'm not totally sure. Maybe just trying it on for size. How does this work? You know, because, you know, Ronnie's normally a little bit more crafted in his imagery. It's a little bit more curated, a little bit more cozy.
Yeah,
has more of the kind of farmhouse vibe to it.
Yeah.
So this is a different that's a different feel for him altogether.
Dude, you're right. Yeah, it's like we're back in a certain time period, and like Picasso has just released a new painting, and we're trying to parse it. You know, it's like we're looking at like Guernica for the first time.
Yeah, but like he tried a different style. Like he went to Cubism, and you're like, this is
a different move for Picasso.
For him.
Pablo, what happened? You know, yeah. If it was a mockery, I think I would respect it a little bit more, honestly. Like if he was kind of trying to drag at Jared C with by trying to do the same picture, I think I would have some more respect for it. But
well, see, and I think that might be the case because he was on his way to see best friend Jared C. Wilson. So I kind of wonder if it was a like coming at you, bro, type of thing.
Are they together right now?
I don't know if they are this very minute, but they have been in recent days.
That would explain that would explain why he has no time for this program lately. Like I feel like when he goes to see Jared, it's as though there's no internet in Kansas City, and he's just
maybe
like,
there.
Clear
maybe mind. There was some like confrontation and reconciliation that needed to happen after Ronnie and I did the Art of Pastoring podcast.
That is true.
Which was an absolute. I mean, it was a real conversation, but it was an absolute mockery of Jared. So,
did you guys get some blowback on that from Jared?
I mean, a couple tweets.
Couple tweets.
Blowback. Yeah. Who knows what happened in their best friend's sphere?
That is true.
Of text messages and phone calls and late night FaceTimes and whatever else to kind of work through the emotional angst of all of that.
Maybe Jared was like laying in his bedroom on his stomach under the poster of Tom Brady with like his ankles kicked up in the air, like twirling the house phone cord in his fingers while talking to Ronnie, you know,
I can absolutely see it. what pattern is like the quilt and bedspread? Is it like, is it Patriots? Is it, you know?
Yeah, I think it's
what
like,
is it?
It's Patriots.
G.I. Joe.
Yeah. Yeah. Patriots. There's like some G.I. Joe stuff on there too. And, you know, he's got the little corded house phone and his ankles are up in the air and he's just talking to his best friend long into the night, you know, just connecting, doing what pastors do.
Well, they had some hard things to work through. So I'm glad they took that step.
Honestly, if like Megan Barada now, my bad. If our resident artist Megan wanted to draw that, I would be here for it.
Yes, that would be amazing.
Both of them in their respective bedrooms. Ronnie under his like,
well, he would be on his back with his feet kicked straight up in the air, like against the wall.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
He's that pose.
Yeah, under a poster of like The Smiths or The Cure. Subtext: I have a complicated emotional life. You know.
Yeah, possible lava lamp in that room.
Yeah, I could see it. Yeah, minimalist. Like maybe an homage to like dirt bikes or whatever. But yeah, like,
That would be like just the helmet hanging on the corner of the bed post.
Yeah. Helmet like hanging on the bed post.
Yeah.
But yeah, the room would be like 3/4 mope rock from Great Britain. And then, the other fourth would be maybe like dirt bikes, but yeah, feet definitely up against the wall. Twirling the phone cord in the self same way that Jared is twirling it on his end. And Megan, if you're out there and you want to paint that, we would be thrilled. But Piper, we're going to talk about travel preferences, because apparently Ron has also been tweeting out the fact that he loves to stay in tiny houses when he travels, in classic small town humble pastor fashion again, finding tiny houses to stay in. My question to you is, like, scale 1 to 10, how would you place like your desire to stay in a tiny house?
-6.
Yeah. Talk about that.
It starts with the fact that I am not tiny, you know?
Yeah,
and
right.
I think
you're bigger.
You can empathize with this. Yeah. We're about the same height.
Yeah.
I easily clear 200 pounds. Mm-hmm. Anything that is described as tiny feels claustrophobic and restrictive right from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, you can save money on a subcompact car. You know what? That sounds awful. A tiny house is the subcompact car of sleeping accommodations. I want to be able to stand up and not hit my head. So there's just a pragmatic aspect to it. And then there's just like, I don't do cozy. Like coziness is not a thing for me.
Yeah.
My wife is very much on the opposite end of the scale. Like she loves the idea of coziness. So blankets and pillows and, you know, kind of close quarters and like warmth and all of that makes me feel constricted and like sweaty.
Yeah.
And that's like tiny house feels like that to me.
Yeah.
I just kind of am immediately like, I would like space. Or just pure functionality, like a simple hotel room that then I can leave works just fine too.
No, absolutely. It's so funny with the tiny house thing, because I remember like 4 or 5 years ago when all those documentaries dropped on Netflix, I remember watching them and being kind of drawn in by them, but also at the very same moment thinking, this is really stupid. Like, this was conceived by people who have way too much time and way too much money and are just too creative by half. Like, the thought of taking like a shed and something that you could drag behind a trailer and making a house out of it just seems so incredibly dumb to me.
When did people stop realizing that this is just making trailer parks sexy?
Yeah, like, so, but for the people who would get into a tiny house, these people are like the furthest away from the people who would gravitate toward a trailer park, right? So these are like, you know, effete, well-to-do hipsters who are sort of quote-unquote choosing this quote-unquote lifestyle. And yeah, like people who live in trailer parks probably aren't there by choice, you know? So it's a totally different set of math for these two people groups. But like, the tiny house thing has had more staying power than I thought it would. The fact that Ronnie can still sort of go on tiny house Airbnb and seek these places out 6 years later is kind of surprising to me. It's had a longer tail.
I've done this. So my wife and I last summer were going to get away for a few days. And so I was looking at, you know, Airbnbs in North Carolina and East Nashville in the mountains. And, you know, there's a bunch of them that are listed as tiny houses. And I go look and I'm like, that's not a tiny house.
Yeah.
That is an RV that you just planted somewhere.
Exactly.
I can smell it from here. Like, I know exactly what that thing is. And they're like, oh, and then there's a quaint outhouse. I'm like, quaint?
Yeah.
And rustic
right.
are just lies in this case. That's what those are. That means I got to pee in the woods.
Yeah.
And the tiny house thing has become a marketing masterpiece.
Oh, for sure.
And my recollection is that when it started, it was kind of environmental type of people, like environmentally conscious people who really started this. Because like, oh, you can reuse, like we can solve housing issues
right.
by reusing things like shipping containers and stuff like that to create this. And I'm like, okay, there's merit in that idea if it can be done on a mass scale.
Yeah.
But now we're just talking about a cabin
mm-hmm.
that's too small to be comfortable in.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. And where you have to go outside to use the bathroom.
You have to go to the bathroom elsewhere, and then you can like make coffee while sitting on the foot of your bed because there's no other space.
Yeah.
And there's not a place to like sit and read unless you're again on the tiny little bed platform or whatever.
Yeah. It's a really interesting paradigm. And I feel like over the last few years, KK and I have really learned to like parse Airbnb language. Like cozy is a non-starter. Like if someone has the word cozy in their Airbnb listing, you know that it's an old house. It's small. It's probably in a crummy neighborhood.
And the furniture's not comfortable.
Like all these words mean things. And, you know, you have to really kind of do your, you have to do some like serious deep dive kind of etymological work to get yourself into a decent Airbnb. Which kind of has us swinging back to the idea of hotels. So like, we went to Las Vegas last spring and we're about to book another trip to Vegas for May. We stayed in actually the perfect hotel room. It was in the Venetian. It was huge. And I don't know what they did to that building, but like when you were in the room, you couldn't hear a thing. It was like a soundproof, it was like a sound studio. And, you know, the minute we hit that room, it was a suite with like different levels. So like the bedroom was on one level and then you would walk down a few stairs and there was a little living room and like an incredible view of the mountains or whatever. And I was just like, this is the hotel room I've been looking for my entire life. And it's not like I'm in love with the city of Las Vegas or whatever, but we're gonna kind of go back just for that hotel. And then, like, the pool was really great. The restaurants were amazing. If what you actually want to do on vacation is relax, like, to me, that was the place for it. And it kind of has ruined us on, you know, crummy high character Airbnbs and
yeah,
Hampton Inns and that sort of thing forever.
Oh, probably. Yeah. It's so, Lauren and I we are coming to the end of a house hunting season.
Oh, wow.
We're under contract waiting for the appraisal. It's all very exciting. But yeah, in that process, you know, yeah, like, I always thought for a long time I wanted, like, a high character house. Like, man, mm-hmm, an old house would be great. And then I started looking at it. I'm like, you know what I like? Convenience. Yeah. I like convenience and 100%. Comfort. And,
yeah,
it's even more true when I travel.
Yeah.
So, like, when I look at Airbnbs and I see a tiny house, I'm like, that is intentionally inconveniencing myself.
Yeah.
Or a cozy old house with character. I'm like, no, I want a new house with a redone kitchen. That's what I want.
Absolutely.
I want Wi-Fi. I want air conditioning.
Yeah.
Especially if I'm going to stay there for more than, like, 2 nights. You know,
yeah,
maybe, like, the longer I'm going to stay, the more space I want and the more comfort I want. And I think I'm just I'm just sort of that grumpy middle-aged guy who's like, traveling is an inconvenience.
Yeah.
Kind of by itself.
Yeah.
When I arrive, I want this to be as perfectly comfortable as possible.
Definitely. I think it kind of ultimately comes down to who you're trying to impress. And by the time you get to be our age, you're not really trying to impress anybody anymore. And, like, I remember when I was, like, 25 and we were buying our first house, it seemed really important to, like, I don't know, live in the kind of, like, you know, gritty but artsy downtown neighborhood and have the old house with character that we were, like, redoing stuff on. And now, like, that set of criteria just feels unspeakably stupid to me. Almost so much that, like, I can't believe that I was that person, but it wasn't that long ago. You know what I mean? And, like, maybe.
Yeah, there was a time when it felt like the suburbs were totally selling out.
Oh,
and now
totally.
It's like,
yeah.
Oh, I know why people live here. It's because Target is a mile away.
Yeah.
And my house has square footage and I could let the dog out in the back, the fenced in backyard, and nobody's going to, like, steal it or poison it.
Yeah.
And it's all good.
There was a time when, like, you were supposed to be really disdainful of the suburbs. You know, the suburbs were evil. The suburbs were, like, you know, taupe and boring and, like, where your parents lived and, like, where you went to sell out. And, yeah, now they are actually really appealing, you know? 'Cause it's not like, I don't know, when you're a 45-year-old parent of two, it's not like you're, like, you know, walking a block and a half down to a cool bar. You know, like, we're, right, we're going to go, yeah, hear a band.
What's the new farm-to-table restaurant that's,
yeah,
popped,
yeah,
up in the old dry goods store on the corner?
Yeah, where can I pay $94 for a burger? You know, let's go do that. I mean, it's just, life is different.
And I have such conflicted feelings about this particular, like, the tiny house thing. I have no conflicted feelings about.
Yeah.
They could just, they're for somebody else. They can all go away.
Yeah.
I grew up in the city, like, right downtown, yeah, Minneapolis. Urban living was, and not like hipster city at that point. It was, yeah, just kind of city.
Yeah.
And so, like, I had an idealized, like, this is the best place to live.
Yeah, right.
And then I went to college at Wheaton, which is antithetical to city.
Right.
It's just the most Pleasantville, rich, suburban, quaint community ever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I lived in the Wheaton area for years afterwards. And then I moved to Tennessee and have lived in the suburbs. So, I mean, I've spent significantly more of my life living in the suburbs than I have in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only been in the last couple years that I've kind of realized maybe this isn't so bad. Like,
yeah,
there's still part of me that wants to live in the city. But then when I go walk around, I'm like, it would be really inconvenient to live here.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Yeah. Just
having to find a spot to parallel park my car to go up 3 floors to my 2-bedroom flat sounds,
yeah,
you know, tiresome.
It does.
I'll be honest.
Yeah, lugging groceries up a flight of stairs or whatever. Yeah, no, it's different. And yeah, KK and I both actually used to have the city living fantasy, you know? And we lived in a couple of big cities in our marriage, but we kind of lived, you know, further enough out that we were just in apartment complexes, not quite in the suburbs, but not quite in, like, cool hipster downtown. which is probably the experience that most people have living in cities, to be honest. And yeah, I don't know that I would for sure go back to that. But
I would say for people with no kids, the city has real perks.
Dude,
like, I still have at the back of my mind, like, okay, you know, down the road, empty nesters, like the kids are well established elsewhere. What might it look like to have an apartment in the city or something like that, kind of downsize or that kind of thing? Because I do love the city, but yeah, the thought of just trying to navigate life, you know, kids going to swim and to dance and to youth group and all this stuff from, you know, a house with, you know, a tiny house in a neighborhood with no yard or whatever. I'm like, man, how did my parents pull that off? That all seems very complicated.
Oh, I know it. Okay. So this begs two questions. Let's sort of spend a minute on this from the ministry trends standpoint. So, like, I feel like for the last 12 to 15 years, the city, capital T, capital C, has been the thing ministry.
Thanks, Tim Keller.
Yeah. So Timmy K, like, does his thing. It works out good for him. And then, like, so you've got this sort of movement where, like, we've got to redeem the cities. And it seems like that's kind of like all the books have been written, all the conference talks have been given on that could be given. It's not a bad thing at all. But it's kind of winding down. My question to you is, are the suburbs ever going to get like another go around in the spotlight? Because I feel like the 80s were the decade of, like, you know, Bill Hybels building a massive megaplex church in some Chicago suburb and everybody flocking to that. But it's been a long time since that was cool. And it would be hard. Here's the problem with suburban stuff getting cool again. I think in the Instagram and Twitter-centric world that we live in, it just functionally would be hard to make that look cool. So regardless of who you're trying to impress, it's tougher to, like, photograph it and filter it and make it look cool. You know what I mean?
So what's cool is renewal.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
From the Instagram and Twitter world. So urban renewal, where you take old warehouses and turn them into, you know, studio apartments or condos or whatever.
Yeah.
Old church buildings getting repurposed. Well, the suburbs are a little ways away from that, but, like, they're on the front end of the renewal. You know, you get, like, the strip mall that is now mostly vacant.
Yeah.
But now it has church plants and it has, you know, a smoothie bar and it has vegan restaurants and it has, like, so there's, like, the renewal thing is moving suburban. Plus the fact that it used to be that the city was the affordable place to live because nobody wanted to live there.
Yeah, right.
Well, now cities are so expensive. Nobody can live there except for, you know, double income, no kids, or just wealthy people. Everybody's moving to the suburbs because it's actually easier to get a home
square
here.
Footage.
So I do think the suburbs are going to have their day, but it's going to be a lot more like it has more to do with, like, renewal and population turnover.
Yeah.
The, you know, there's all the gentrification in the cities. Take that, you know, there are people who think that's of the devil. There are people who are like, that's urban renewal. It's probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
But people are now leaving the city and, you know, yuppies move to the city, then they have kids and are like, oh, these schools stink and I don't have a yard or any extra bedrooms. Where do I go? Well, you go to the suburbs. I think that's going to be the case. So I think what's probably going to end up happening is that some of these churches that have, you know, been established in the cities are going to start to plant churches in the suburbs, have campuses in the suburbs, those kinds of things where, like, that's where the people are. So But I don't know that the suburbs will ever be, they will never be sexy. You know, like, small town church planting has a Wendell Berry sexiness to it.
Yeah.
Urban church planting has a, like, Mark Driscoll meets Tim Keller sexiness to it. Suburban living is, you know, Izod golf shirts. So, you know, nothing sexy about that.
The last question, and then we should wrap it if we want to do any kind of a sports app on the back end of this. How sexy do you think small town church planning can get? Because, like, Ron's trying to make it sexy now with his book. You know, so having grown up in a certain kind of small town, not a sexy one. Like, I love my small town, but it was not sexy. It wasn't sort of Instagrammable and quaint in the way that they are thinking of it. Like, and that's most small towns. You know, most, at least Midwestern small towns are very agrarian, non-union labor, just little towns, right? They kind of got killed by, you know, various decisions that other people made. How sexy do you think that can get? Like, what's the ceiling on it?
I think it's ripe for people to try it and fail.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of thing where, like, so, you know, young guys come out of seminary or they feel called to church planting, and maybe they are called to church planting, and they're like, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
There's a little town in, you know, rural Minnesota, and they need a vibrant church community. So they drop in there with all this energy, not realizing that there's like 150 years of deep relational history, mistrust of outsiders.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's a really warm community, but it's still like, yo, we do things by the seasons here.
Right.
Like, you know, we have our rhythms, we have our places, everybody has their place. Like, you don't come in and just do this. So I think there's... And I've read a couple books, you know, when I worked in publishing, I would do some press release work and stuff like that. And I read a couple on rural or small town church planting that were a lot less about the sexiness and more about the, like, what does it look like to be a faithful pastor in this context?
Yeah.
And I read it and I was like, oh, that's not for most people.
Yeah.
You know, because the pastor's like, you know, it's... You're covering a massive geographic area.
Yeah.
Because people are driving in from farms miles away, sure, and things like that. He said, you know, you might spend the morning helping somebody birth calves, the afternoon throwing hay bales with the guy whose son went away to college and he needs the labor, and then get a call late at night that somebody's wife just had a heart attack and each one is 17 miles from the other one or something. And I'm just like, yeah, that's not a life that... This isn't quaint coffee shop conversations or, you know, Saturday mornings in the diner with all the old men kind of thing.
Yeah.
That sounds fun and you know, sure, movie worthy.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. There's very little about it that is movie worthy or sexy. And the trust runway is really long. Like, I feel like my parents have lived in our little small town for 44 years. And they're just now sort of getting entree into, okay, you guys like really belong, you know, and that's not unusual. I mean, that's kind of normal. So yeah, for the super performative, fired up, fresh out of seminary guy who's looking to make a kind of brand statement with this, I don't think it's the move, but it will be interesting to see how much the publishing industry gets out of it, you know?
And it's hard to imagine, I mean, the difference. It's hard to express the difference between urban church planting and small town or rural pastoring in terms of like rhythm and style.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you pastor in an urban area, odds are 2/3 of your congregation will roll over every 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, there's just a lot of transients.
Just transients, mm-hmm, which means that the pace at which you do things is so different than a place where you're the new guy after you've been there 10 years.
Yeah, that's so true.
And so what is the pace of relationship building, trust building? And I'm not saying this as an expert as much as just kind of painting the picture of how these things are just grossly different.
Yeah, they are. They really are different. You know, which is why our industry, i.e. Christian publishing, which kind of roams to and fro throughout the landscape, like seeking the next sort of big score financially. I don't know. I don't know if like it's going to be there, but it'll be interesting. You know, it's always fun to watch these things and sort of see what happens.
Yeah, I'm very encouraged by the fact that small town pastors are sort of coalitioning, if you will. To verbify a word,
mm-hmm,
you know, to kind of, because it's got to be a pretty isolated existence.
Yeah.
So to have that, to have those networks and friendships is significant, but to turn it into some, like our drive of turning something into a movement or a brand or a conference or whatever is like, why? Yeah. Everybody was doing great. Just like encourage each other in doing great.
Yeah, no, you're right. And one of the more charming things about small town people is their desire to not turn everything into a marketing movement. You know, it's one of the more refreshing things about small town life, if we're being honest. So, you know, it'll be interesting. But Pipe, we have NFL quarterback movement to talk about on our other podcast. So I'm going to say that we have roamed to and fro throughout this topic of travel. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
If you're tired of parenting advice and news headlines that are more confusing than assembling IKEA furniture, we've got just the podcast for you. My dear friend Abby and I are here to help you navigate the parenting roller coaster.
Should your kids be on social media? What should you tell a friend facing an unplanned pregnancy? These are just some of the many questions we tackle on our podcast.
Subscribe to The Real Deal of Parenting wherever you find your podcast.